Hello there. Welcome to James Gordon, Song and Rants Man, a podcast featuring, not surprisingly, me, James Gordon. Okay, so I'm a pretty lucky guy today because I have a live in-person guest for today's episode, and it is my next-door neighbor, Dean Hike. And when we get talking over the fence, sometimes the conversation drifts towards something that is a bit of a specialty for you, Dean, which is talking about mindfulness. And I'm also thinking that if we're not totally mindful about that, we can drift into many other topics as well. But that's just fine with me.
Absolutely anything can happen here.
Yeah, we'll just see if the studio's still standing when we're done. We're in good shape. So welcome.
Thank you.
And I guess we'll start easy by... You've been doing work in what you would call mindfulness. So maybe give us a little, like, what the hell do you mean by that?
Well, it's funny. I never knew what I was doing was mindfulness until other people told me that. That was, you know, at the time when, before mindfulness really became the it girl of the wellness movement. And there are a lot of M words I try not to use anymore when I talk to people about what I do. It's sort of just a way I've always approached things, both professionally and personally. And then people say, hey, you should start talking about this mindfulness because that's what you're doing. And I really had no idea. So quite frankly, that's probably I don't use the word very often.
Because right.
I don't want to be, you know, the it girl.
No.
In a lot of ways. So.
Huh. So for you, it's... And it's just me observing over the fence.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a practice that you have, but you don't have to label it necessarily. So.
Well, absolutely. And I also think that what I do, if I labeled it with anything, I might be insulting the people that actually deserve that label.
Right.
Everything I believe I do is a slightly bastardized version of something else.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a mutt on all fronts that way. And I'm really hesitant to say that I'm a mindfulness guy.
Sure.
I say that's what other people say, and quite frankly. So
so why do you think they say that?
Because mindfulness is, you know, it's like it's turned into a bit of a catch-all. And mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, that whole living in the moment thing and blah, blah, blah. And all the other motivational poster speak that you want to have is that's easy to put into a big catch-all of mindfulness. And I say mindfulness to me now has been sort of monetized. It's
right.
You know, it's people say all kinds of things, much like the word Zen is monetized and it's used all over the place, whether people, they know what it means or not. So, yeah, I think that, you know, I'm close to doing what I do is mindfulness. And the other M word that goes with it, meditation, which I don't call it that anymore. I call it self-regulation of attention.
Okay, so without using those phrases that are overdone and perhaps misleading, tell us a little bit about, there's a question that in my advanced age now I ask myself a lot. Mm. And that is...
Where's the bathroom?
Yeah. Where's the bathroom? And why do I want to go in the middle of the night?
Exactly that, yes.
But I'm trying to think of the actual phrase that gets passed around where knowing that we're in challenging times, how is the very best way to live your life? And I think, you know, I'm very conscious of that, so... I'm making decisions now based on what's the very best use of my precious time and how am I best contributing to this worried world. So when people sort of thrust these labels on you, they're doing it because they're witnessing ways that you have chosen. So tell us a bit about that.
I think that they're always disappointed, I think, in a lot of sense, because they think that you're going to have some sort of magic practice that's going to, you know, turn everything around and you just got to, you know, sit down and face the east for 5 minutes a day and you're going to be just enlightened and peaceful. And I think what you're talking about as far as, you know, people looking for some sort of satisfaction in what they do, I tell people for the most part not to be dealing with what they think of as outcomes and goals. And what I think of as being, you know, in the moment is focusing how you do things rather than what you're doing in a lot of ways. And it's like, how are you spending the energy that you have representing what you stand for.
Right.
As a person. And as I say, what you stand for, it's not how, it's really, it's how you define yourself by something that you can't lose.
Huh.
So it's more like, how do I express my, you know, service or my honesty or my loyalty? And then, you know, what, you know, skills do I have to bring to that, to whatever I'm happy to be doing?
Right.
Not thinking about and never treating anything as a means to an end.
Huh. So, interesting, because I'm imagining most people who might listen to what we're offering today were raised and trapped in a colonialist, capitalist mindset where those goals and outcomes are just part of their DNA.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So what do you, or what can you suggest, or what do you offer to people if you're saying, yeah, we got to get off that? What's the alternative?
Well, the alternative is to sort of back your, the way you view life, back it way up. And rather than having something sort of off in the distance that you think you're striving for, and, you know, let's face it, like you, that whole colonial capitalistic system is designed on sort of designed obsolescence, or always going to something else afterwards. Right. So whenever you get to what you think is the goal that you thought you were supposed to have, you get there and,
got another one.
Yeah, well, it's not what I, and so what you're doing is you're constantly putting what I would call happiness just beyond the cognitive horizon,
right,
rather than having it be where you are right now. And that therein lies the whole, you know, be in the moment type of thing. And so I think that's what I try and tell people is, let's not think about, you know, where you think you want to end up. Let's just really focus on what we're doing.
Yeah. And how do you do that?
Well, there's two things.
Yeah.
You know, that's so odd. People, when they talk about mindfulness, they talk about, you know, that whole being in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you might want to add that, you know, you're going to be in the moment non-judgmentally and pay attention to what you're doing. Well, that's all well and good. But most people aren't equipped to do that, quite frankly, because their brains have been sort of built on not doing that.
Right.
Which means that the actual structure and makeup of the brain is so much so that, you know, if you talk about two specific brain parts, the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex are sort of, one's bigger than it should be and one's not as big as it should be. And that does not promote a lack of worry about what's coming.
Right.
Or the ability to respond to your situation rather than react to it and choose how you're going to respond to it. So in really, although you want to say that whole be in the moment thing, you also have to start building the neurological equipment, if you will, to be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, okay, do that for me.
Yeah. Well, and therein lies the other M word, you know, which I call the self-regulation of attention, which is really what, and I don't want to insult anybody else's meditation practice.
Right.
I say, this is, I'm not a meditation guru or anything like that. And, but I do know that there's neurological basis to what they do and why it's been around for so long. And,
right.
And I've tried to pare that down and make it as simplistic as possible. So that you can get neurological change that will help you to then, you know, not be so goal oriented and perhaps be more in where you are.
If I was a white pine, I'd know just what to do. Stretch to the sky and put down some roots. Happy in the sunshine, happy in the rain. I'd be a young pine and that'd be okay. If I was a robin, I'd sit up in that tree. I'd know my job and I know that I'd be free to do a little singing, spread around some seeds. Just a bird on the wing and I'd have all that I would need. But I am human, things are not so clear. Don't know what I'm doing, don't know why I'm here. Just looking for the truth and a little insight. Just looking for you, was a spaniel, I lead a simple life. Nothing I couldn't handle with a little bark or a bite. Nothing too rough, and that'd be my only word. It'd be enough, peeing on trees and chasing birds. Looking for you on this lonely night. Always looking for direction, trying to figure things out. Maybe our connection is what it's all about.
Sort of describing a bit of a toolbox that you'd want people to have so that they can be attentive to where they want to be.
Absolutely.
What's in your toolbox?
Well, what's in my toolbox is I would never want anybody to develop their toolbox in what I had to go through to get it.
No, but I think that you probably have to acknowledge that now people are looking to you as an example, or hey, look what Dean's doing. Maybe I should think about stuff like that.
Yep.
So what do you tell them?
Well, I tell them to develop a regular, everyday, several times a day practice of working on your attention and what I call following your breath in a self-directed way, which, you know, to me, that's what sort of and I say this is strictly to me, what kind of defines meditation to me is that, okay, then we're going to meditate, if you will, on our breath.
Right.
Because it turns out when we bring our attention to something that our body does on its own, the amygdala goes offline and shrinks, and the prefrontal cortex becomes more regenerative, and even your hippocampus and other things react in a positive fashion that will allow you to be more, air quotes, mindful.
Right. Huh. Cool. And I've noticed over the fence,
yes,
that somewhat different than some people who are following a similar path, that you do a combo of addressing your mental and physical wellness at the same time.
Well,
can you talk about that?
Absolutely. I would say that, you know, my physical practices are a little obsessive and off the charts, but at the same time, you can't separate the two. You know, we are an ecosystem, not only as individuals, but as a society. And it's that constant reductionist way of looking at things that, oh, I'm going to work on my mental health, I'm going to work on my physical health.
Right.
It's all health.
Right. But too often it gets separated, right? Especially in our system. And because this is called Song and Rants.
Yes.
This is an opportunity. Say, what's busted that means we have to look for different ways to do that?
Well, I think that it's an acknowledgement of the fact that those things are if you will, and they you can't have one without the other,
right.
And it seems that it's all been broken up, and I am not it's funny, a lot of people think, you know, they look at me and what I do, and they think I'm some sort of, I've been all current kinds of alternative this and that,
sure.
And, you know, stare into the crystal and lick the salt lamp or whatever else you're going to do. And I don't, I just think that you have to, link how you move through the world in a way that's mentally and physically healthy, and the two have to go together.
Right.
And you don't turn one off and start the other one. They all have to sort of flow into the same stream.
Yeah.
And so that you're constantly dealing with both of them at the same time. And so that in your exercise or any kind of physical practice, you are practicing the idea of being there totally.
Right.
That's why I don't, when I go running, I don't listen to something in my head, you know, a podcast or even music for the most part. Because otherwise I'm be distracting from what I am doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's all part of it to a certain extent. Whereas also too, I don't do as much of the, and I do, but I do a lot of actual sitting and following my breath on my own. But I also do a lot of practices that involve movement, which have evolved, long. I didn't invent any of those. Mostly I do what they call Qigong.
Mm-hmm.
Same idea where it's that there's a marriage of your physical and mental, and you have to have that.
We'll talk about focus, I guess.
Okay.
In the idea about your breath, for instance,
yep.
You need to zone everything else out kind of to do that. And yet we are living in a time right now where we're totally sensorily overloaded. There's stuff coming at us from every direction all the time. Yep. So it's harder to filter too.
Well, for sure. But I think a lot of people, when they say, I can't possibly meditate because I can't think about nothing. And that's not the point.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we have to acknowledge all of those distractions. And that's what when I talk about self-regulation of attention, it's like you are going to be distracted by stuff that is going to take your focus away from your breath, be it a thought, or be it internal or external noise in some way. And it's by acknowledging, oh, look what's distracting me, I'm going to go back to this. And it's that active process. It's not the idea of sitting and thinking about nothing and you know, levitating on the spot. It's that process. It's an active process. It's hard work of acknowledging what those distractions are and then coming on back to what you want to focus on. And that little thing that you're working on, no different than, say, you're exercising your legs so that you didn't get out of breath when you walked upstairs.
Right.
So when you come into those things and you are bombarded, from things on the interwebs to everything else, you have a more active filter because you are taking charge of what your focus is rather than just being forced to take everything in.
Huh. So for myself, people always say, hey, you're a musician. Mm. What are you listening to right now? People would be confused to know that I don't listen very often to music because it has to have my undivided attention if I'm listening to it.
Yes.
And there was a generation, like when I was a teenager, you'd go to a friend's house and you'd sit and you'd listen to an album.
Yes.
Which is amazing. I'd love to do that again, but I can't do it. I can't have it. I can't have it in the background.
I can and I can't.
Oh yeah.
I totally get what you just said. And yes, like the whole experience that's a mindful experience in itself.
Sure.
Isn't it? Cause when we had albums in the day, it was a multi-sensory experience, right?
Right.
You'd throw that on, you'd sit down,
you'd
look
you'd
at the
line going around. Yeah.
Of that, all of those things. You'd be immersing yourself in that experience. It's not often that we immerse ourselves in experiences anymore, is it?
Well, that's what I was going to ask is that, maybe we've lost that gift of immersion too. Like how do you get that back? Because it feels more essential now.
Yeah, and I think that too, we've really given way too much value and credence to the idea of getting as much shit done as possible and multitasking.
Right.
So it's like you run around like your hair's on fire and trying to get all kinds of different things done rather than doing one thing at a time with all your focus.
Right.
And we don't have those practices or the things that happen in our everyday life that we would do that. Like, but go buying a big chunk of vinyl and sitting down and reading the liner notes and being involved in that and experiencing that art in a personal manner rather than just as a matter of course.
Right.
Like you say in the background, and I am a background music guy, but I'm also a listen upfront guy. Those are two different experiences to me.
Right.
You know, so I will do both, but I will consciously do one or the other.
Would you agree that we societally we've kind of lost those tools a little bit, right?
Well, they've been devalued,
right?
You know, I think that's a lot of it. We've devalued the immersion of doing anything. It's like there's always you're in the middle of doing something, and if there's a break in the action, you whip out your phone and you're doom scrolling or whatever else you're going to be doing. And rather than, I think a lot of it too is we don't value the space between things.
Huh.
You know, it's all got to sort of flow together and be something continuous, and all and it's not immersion, it's bombardment. You know, and I think that's the difference.
Yeah. I can think, okay, James, you got to practice more, and not to overuse that phrase, but be more mindful.
Mm-hmm.
I also am overwhelmed with a sense of urgency. Look at the world right now. I got to do something, and I got to do it by 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
and that kind of gets in the way, because that means, you know, I'm in 6 different directions at once looking at that. But,
and that, I think too is that's the type of thing too, when you say develop a practice of being able to immerse yourself in something, is we have lots of things that we do throughout the day that we skip over the surface of, and be it putting something away, be it sweeping something, being it all those things,
right?
And we will, you know, quite often throw on a podcast in our head, like this one.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to this and you're doing something else, sit down and listen. Crying out loud.
For heaven's sake.
Yeah, for heaven. Yeah. You just, give us your full attention. Don't put that, whatever it is you're doing, break down, please.
Yeah.
but that's it. You know, it's like, you know, if you are, like, if I'm cleaning up after my dog in the backyard, that's what I'm doing. And my mind, I don't want my mind to be someplace else. You know, what if I'm doing anything, and it's not devaluing what I'm doing, because that happens to be where my life is at that moment. There's only one place where life happens, and that's in the here and now. And if we are skipping past the experience that we are now, we're not living fully, no matter what that experience is. And that is a practice in itself.
Right.
We always think that I want to, you know, when I get out to that, you know, beautiful meadow and some alpine thing, I want to be able to take it all in. Well, you're not going to, if you haven't been doing that with everything else in your life at the same time.
Right.
You know, when you have a conversation with somebody, do they have all of you? Are you listening to them and giving, you know, everything from your heart? All of that. If you're washing the dishes, are you experiencing the heat of that on your hands and the value of what you are doing? We've devalued so many things that are just what we say would be mundane, whereas I say that's living. And so as a result, we don't live, and we're always waiting for life to happen.
I used to take a sense of pride in the fact that people would say, James, look at you, get so much done. That's because you're a great multitasker. And more lately, I've been thinking, well, I don't want to be a multitasker. I want to be able to do one thing well.
Yes.
And focus on that. But I'm losing those tools. And if we constantly get rewarded and applauded for multitasking, which we do, then there's a taking away process that we need too around that, right?
Oh, there is. And the irony of it is that neurologically, multitasking is impossible.
Yeah.
You can't do two things at once with your brain. You do one thing, then you switch over, and you get a constant, what I refer to as a switch cost from going from one thing to the other.
Yeah.
And so as a result, whatever you're doing, you're skipping off the surface of all the things that you are supposedly multitasking.
But
what you're doing is you're turning that off, you're turning it on over here, and you're doing it. And that's energetically not efficient. Neurologically or any other type of energy. And it's like, you know, therein lies the problem, is that we never give ourselves fully to whatever we happen to be doing. So if it comes to be, you know, something that we deem as so important, that may be, we can't just turn it off and on,
right?
We haven't practiced the ability to not multitask, to singularly fully put yourself into whatever you happen to be doing.
Are you busy? Hey, it's before the bugs and after the snow. I could put the canoe on the car and then away we'd go. We could follow the ice down the swift spring stream into the green of the season, the Canadian dream. Are you busy? Are you busy? Are you busy? We'll stop trying to change the world for a day or two. Bet that it would wait a bit for me and you. Nobody would even know we were gone. We'll watch the moon yawning and then greet a new dawn. Are you busy? Are you busy? We wouldn't have to think of it as running away. It's just getting to where we belong. A place where we won't fall under the sway of those who would say that this is wrong. Are you busy? We could get out past the streetlights, beyond the sprawl. You and I can sense the wonder of it all. Where we can feel the bounty of this earth, find what's real, where we can taste a rebirth. Are you busy? Are you busy? Are you busy? It's not a big fish here that I'm trying to fry. It's just a kind of shy invitation to a girl from a guy who thinks that maybe stopping the clock for a while could give us a break from this crazy lifestyle. Are you busy? I think there's something to be said for just rolling with this tide, for moving ahead without thinking ahead, but keeping our eyes open wide. Are you busy? Hey, it's before the bugs and after the snow. Around here there's a couple of weeks between those two things, you know. There's a limited opportunity. I think that there are possibilities. Are you busy? Are you busy? Are you busy? Are you busy? Yeah, I guess I am too. Maybe another time.
I keep telling people that, you know, what's happened is that doing nothing has become my superpower. Really?
Yeah.
I've become really good at it. And,
all right.
I do believe it to be a superpower.
Yeah.
But I think it aggravates the hell out of, you know, certain people I live with. But
right. And your neighbors, man, it bugs your neighbors.
I bet it does. Yeah. What's he doing? He's doing nothing.
Right. So you do, I happen to know, maybe tell us a little bit. I don't know if you call it a practice or not, but you do physical activities and adventures that would be, that have sort of an aspect of Zen attached to them, wouldn't you say? Like, is that, what's happening for you when you go on a solo canoe trip, which you just did.
That's your, I guess that's exactly what I'm doing, is that it's, the thing is, when you go on a canoe trip by yourself in the wilderness, and it's true wilderness, you can't not be in the moment and expect something bad not to happen.
Right.
So I think that, it is a certain part of my practice that those things that I do, those are the really big things.
Right.
You know, that's a grander, I think that's what a lot of people would consider your spa day, I guess. Where, you know what I mean? Where I'm pulling out all the stops, and this is just, I'm totally immersed in where I am and what I'm doing, more so than I ever am any other time. And also it helps that it's stunning and it's beautiful and it's the natural world and all of those things. And it feels a tad hypocritical, because I often tell people, like, don't try and make your practice more precious than it needs to be. You don't need to have robes and incense and gongs and running water and everything else to do what you need to do. But man, it's so sweet when you have it. I have to tell you that for sure.
Right.
And that's sort of what those wilderness trips of mine that I do.
Well, in fact, that leads to maybe a sidebar conversation about when I notice that the world is sped up, we're under a lot more pressure, we have a lot more questions, where we more commonly are trying to address those in our current society, we're inside in an urban environment.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
So, and I notice I now spend, it's a practice for me to spend as much time as I can in the nice weather up at my little boat retreat up north, little houseboat. Every time I'm there, I go, well, Jesus, James, why aren't you here all the time?
Mm-hmm.
but you're an urban dweller.
I am.
But have you found a balance then?
Well,
for that?
Do you
know what I mean?
Well, absolutely I have. Yeah. And you've may or may not have inadvertently noticed this, living where you are, I'm always outside.
Right.
My exercise practice is rain or shine, snow or sleet, all year outside. I do as much as I can outside, because what happens too is there's twofold there. One, there is a huge mental health component to being outside. It is way better for you mentally.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is, and that this falls into the another part, we lose our connection with what the world is doing, while we sit in our heated and air conditioned spaces, and we try and deny what's going on outside, and here we are, environmentally, because of that divorce, if you will, between us and what's going on outside.
Right.
So I think that aside, there's two. Everything is interrelated, but it's like, so there's the, it's better for you to be outside mentally and physically, I believe.
Sure.
But it's also better for the world for us to be outside, so that we have more of a feeling of what is going on out there and what we need to do to make things the way they should be.
I don't need a church when I see the sun through the birches. I believe when the lake lends its light to the red cliffs, the sight is like a stained glass epiphany. I got the Holy Trinity, cool water, warm rocks and tall trees on Carlisle Lake, on Carlisle Lake. I don't need religions on the blueberry ridges, the Great Spirit whispers to me. No dogma, no doctrine, just a quiet walk in the forest cathedral. the Holy Trinity. Cool water, warm rocks, and tall trees on Carlisle Lake. On Carlisle Lake. Long afternoons when the sun. Got the Holy Trinity, cool water, warm rocks, and tall trees on Carlisle Lake, on Carlisle Lake. No need for a prayer when the great blue heron skims over the tops of the pines. No apostles, no gospel, this little waltz will do me just fine.
You're an inspiration that way. I can see you out there all the time. And in fact, I remember moving in next door to you and go, well, he's got all that apparatus out there that he's doing workouts and sizes, and it's not covered.
No.
And I thought, okay, that's a choice.
Yep.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's so many things. I probably about 20 years ago, I started thinking, what I'm doing, can I do this outside as much as I can? And so that way I'm not picking and choosing the climate and environment that I want. I am allowing myself to be adaptable to it.
Right.
More than jumping away from it and saying, well, we can't possibly go outside now.
Yeah.
So I try and do as much as I can outside.
Sure. But you see, rant alert here. You're looking for that balance. You also have access.
Absolutely.
To the outside.
Yep.
A lot of people don't.
Nope.
And there's two things going on there. They don't have access to it, or they don't know the value of it.
Yeah, I would say both. It's the double-edged sword. And it's like, and they're not shown any value of it because, well, if it was valuable, I'd be given access to it.
Right.
And so there's that. And then I think that it's how we design, you know, and then you write down into urban design and everything else. You know, what are we, you know, making available to people? And it's not the same everywhere in the world. There are some very urban societies that have done that. They've supplied places and access and also the mentality that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
You know, what the Japanese refer to as Shinrin-yoku, which is translates to forest bathing.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't think of Japan as being a vastly forested area. You know, we are a part of the fabric of the world, natural, and divorcing yourself from that is at our own peril, and we are on that perilous ride now. And I think that that's a lot of it. The whole North American dream was built on, well, let's squash that shit.
And
do this other thing, which is to set ourselves apart from all of that. And we've been forever and continue to pay the price for that on a personal level and as a societal level.
Yeah. It's interesting. I just finished an endless book, The Dawn of Everything. I don't know if you know about that book. I'll drop in the name at the end of this show.
I'll
quote to it. But they talking about the rise of early civilizations and why we even use that term civilization.
Oh, totally.
But I didn't know, and I've spent years researching indigenous cultures in North America, they now think, archaeologists think, that in especially, not so much here in what we call Ontario now, but in the southern states and large parts of North America, the ancient indigenous societies, some of them were pretty urbanized and big cities, and they were building pyramids in Ohio.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But the premise of the book is that at some point, it looks like, archaeologically anyway, as if those societies looked at it and said, you know what? This ain't working.
And there was a back-to-earth movement.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like a 600-year-old back-to-earth movement.
100%. Yes. I've read those same musings, and I think it makes perfect sense. Where it's like, why did those societies disappear? It's because they thought, this isn't working.
Yeah.
And so we need to get back to what was working.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm a big proponent of that.
Sure. And the reason why that didn't happen more is that a lot of what we called dynasties and empires figured out, okay, they're going to want to run us out of town. So let's just rule them more by fear and violence.
Yeah.
And so to keep ourselves on that throne.
100%.
And where I find the correlation to that, what's happening hundreds of years ago, we're still, and unfortunately we can look to our southern neighbors for that, their lives are based around fear and violence. And that's what they even do for recreation. They watch video games that are so violent that it's scary.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But that's, so that there's more and more obstacles. And I would say our consumerist society, which I would say is not much more than 50 years old, really, we've replaced that desire to be amongst nature, be amongst, be in community, with being amongst stuff.
Oh.
Right? So
it's really, it is the religion of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a religion. I think I think that if you got all the definitions and things you need to have in place to classify something as a religion, I think that it would be it. You know, I think that the whole consumer capitalist thing is religious fervor, and you can see people how they defend it with the same amount of religious fervor, but as you know any other sort of religion has been. Like it feels like this is, as I said, the designed obsolescence and the constant need to upgrade everything in your life is like, it's the crusades of our day, I think.
Sure. Yeah, that's why, you know, when people talk about organized religion, when I think of, when I have a picture of that, it's organized for control.
Absolutely.
They got a blue-eyed Jesus. Preaches the gospel of hate. They got a blue-eyed Jesus. Preaches the gospel of hate. A platoon of believers. They are storming the gates. American Taliban. They're everywhere but hard to like you and me. They say they want their freedom, but what they want is to take yours. They say they want their freedom, but what they really want to take yours. There come a day when you see them knocking at your doors. American Taliban, they're everywhere but hard to see. American Taliban, they look just like you and they put fear in your children with their AR-15.
put fear in your children with their AR-15s. It is clear they don't mind killing. Drive us to our knees, American Taliban. They're everywhere but hard to see. American Taliban, they look just like you and me. They got a blue-eyed Jesus. So, this is a long way of saying there's a lot of crap that we're taking on that, like those 500 years ago, somebody, some tribes or clans made a choice to say, yeah, let's get back to the land. Mm-hmm. But now it seems like a radical thing to do to even think of that, right?
Well, for sure. And, yeah. It's hard to turn the ocean liner around, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what's happened is, we've gotten to this point and it's like, and I think too many people throw up their hands and say, well, what's the point now? And I think that there is a point.
Right.
And once again, it's not keeping our eyes, let me bring it right back to where we were. Yeah. It's not having our eyes on a certain outcome, but starting to value a certain process.
Right.
And then the outcomes will take care of themselves. So it's not like, well, and there's constantly, it's like we talk about, global temperatures and all this stuff. We have, here's our drop dead dates, whatever. And I'm not sure that helps.
No.
It puts, once again, fear into people and maybe a certain amount of hopelessness, which is not what you want from people.
No, but I think, Fanny, I've talked about this. I talked about this in the previous episode of this podcast,
which of course I have listened to,
Where I, Greta Thunberg's famous quote that we have to behave as if our house is on fire.
Mm-hmm.
I love Greta Thunberg. I took a train to New York just to be in the same room with her.
Absolutely.
I have a disagreement with that.
Sure.
Because it needs a second half of that sentence.
Yes.
Which is, we have to behave as if our house is on fire, but here's how we can maybe put the fire out.
Yeah.
And if you don't think there's any way to put it out, you're not going to change your habits. And I notice, it's funny being a fellow urban dweller to you, even with climate change, things like trying to get off internal combustion engines.
Yes.
You've probably even noticed audibly there's a pushback around here where there's a certain percentage of the population that wants a bigger internal combustion engine and a noisier one.
Oh,
right.
Absolutely. Well, why are F-150 trucks the largest selling things?
Because that's
right. Because we're a nation full of contractors and farmers.
So
no.
No. So that's, those people have made a choice. The house is on fire. Screw it. I'm throwing
gas on it.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. That's right. So back to the climbing up the hill to the wise one. We got a lot of habits that we probably need to lose. But you're going back to your example of we are, I don't know if this is compatible to what you've been saying, but when you alluded to climate change,
mm-hmm.
even though I agree with you that those drop dead dates maybe are not helpful, but we're staring at something that looks like, if we don't radically change and get off our religion of consumerism quick, we're doomed. But nobody knows how to do it.
No.
And if we do, they're doing it on an individual level.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not done at a societal level,
mm-hmm.
it's no point either. So where's the middle ground there?
Well, what you bring up is key, is that this is constantly being downloaded to the individual, which is all well and good, but that's not where the big change has to happen.
Right.
You know, and I think that there's this constant, that's where I think the fear mongering comes in. Well, if we can scare the hell out of them saying this is our drop dead date, maybe they'll all buy EVs.
Right. You
know, and then we'll be off the hook.
Right.
The collective, whoever we are. But, yeah. You know, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, please, but it's, but there is a certain amount of, like, that's just logically, it's like, whatever I do with my carbon footprint, yes, matters. And if everybody has the wherewithal and the privilege to do something about their carbon footprint, grand. But it's right. still, I don't think it's going to matter unless all of the other real big things that we all know what they are don't do something drastically different.
Right. And we're fighting too, like you alluded to, the backyard and the picket fence. The American dream that too many people bought into has taught us that the first thing you're looking out for is yourself,
Bingo.
The individual.
Yep.
And it's okay to claw your way to the top, or what you think is the top, by climbing over under other individuals.
Yeah. Well, and it's I think too, as a corollary to that, is what has now become the big misconception with the individual is that freedom means, like, and it's the whole talk about, and yeah, you've written a wonderful song about some of that, those ideas, what people think are freedoms.
Right.
You know, and what they really mean is, I don't want consequence for my choices.
Right.
And they think that's freedom. You know, freedom is, yes, you're free to choose, but, you know, everything What's that we impact? Do has cause and effect. And everybody seems to want to absolutely move away from that and say, no, I'm free. I can do whatever I want. And if it hurts somebody else or whatever, or the fact that I do or don't do something is bad for everybody else, but not for my little corner.
Right.
Then I'm just going to do it because I want my freedoms.
Huh.
You know, and I think that is even more so than being the individual, you know, which obviously individuals have value, but it's like, knowing that as an individual, we are so vastly important as individuals because we have dramatic effect on the world around us.
Sure.
And our choices have those effects.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And then sometimes I think where the bad guys win, I'm not labeling people with white and black hats, but it just like those ancient organized religions built those big temples and pyramids so that you'd be in awe and you I'm signing up for that looks pretty cool. There's such power in corporatized consumerism right now that
those big temples,
they are temples.
Yeah,
anything that's they'll brand, like here my personal example is that I get labeled an activist, which I never knew had a negative connotation.
Like
that's an insult.
It absolutely is. Yeah.
And so is community and socialism.
Yeah.
Those are values that I care a lot about.
Yep.
And yet they get mocked and derided by those that think, oh, that's just a bunch of hippie communists.
Yeah.
When in fact, if you look at hippies and communists, they have a lot of good ideas that we're afraid to adopt because it means shifting out of a culture that we're used to.
Yeah.
If I'm looking for solutions, I think even with climate change and whatever we're doing, it was my son said to me the other day, he said, we're all going to have to make a lot more sacrifices. And I said, as soon as you say that word, everyone's left the building.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the shift for me is to say, no, this isn't a sacrifice. I'm trying to have a lower footprint. I'm trying to get off consumerism. And it feels great.
It does.
It has its rewards that are equal, if not greater, than getting more stuff.
Yeah.
And yet, too many people don't even know that.
Well,
value.
I think too is like because you're talking about what you're talking about is the things that they think gives them their life pleasure,
right?
And it's now it's stuff, right?
Right.
Whereas if they can experience what it feels like to contribute to the greater good, and how that is not transitory, how it doesn't need upgrading, how it's something that just happens, and when it does happen, it fills you up in a way that a new iPhone can't.
Right.
but they have to experience that to a certain level. And as I say those words, I'm sounding like some sort of airy fairy, like you say, hippie comrade Gordon.
Right.
You know, but I'm not. I don't think I have any political affiliation really in that way.
But we're also, you and I would be unusual examples that we can espouse those values. We're both pretty damn privileged.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time. I tick all the privilege boxes.
Yeah.
Every last one of them. I've got them all ticked.
That's right.
Every last one of them.
Yeah. Name something. I got two of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
but going back to the, like, what we consider sacrifices, I notice, like, people say to me, "Joel James, you're active in the community and we admire the work you're doing sometimes." And so it's a selfless activity to try to work on behalf of your community that way. I would actually say no. I get a big ego boost from it.
That's the big thing. People don't realize there is no selfless act.
No,
because ultimately, when you do something, it comes back at you twice.
Oh, sure.
And it's like this huge payback in where it matters. You know, and it's like. Yeah, absolutely. And I that's why a lot of things I tell people is do something nice for somebody today. Just, you know, and it's like, it's not as, you know, altruistic as you think it is, because you'll feel really good about things. Matter of fact, you'll probably feel better than the person you did something for.
Whatever you offer anyone that feels like, in fact, that goes back to Indigenous culture where gifting is such a big part culture.
Mm-hmm.
But still, whatever you gift, you always get more back.
Always. Always. And it's not usually what you get back is more fulfilling than what you've given away, perhaps.
Sure.
You know, and I think that's the thing that people don't realize, because that is not part of, that's not even remotely part of the culture right now. Like, it's not even remotely.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what people think of giving back is, you know, writing a check to some organization there's your conscience assuaged and I don't have to get my hands dirty. I have to worry about that because I gave this to something, you know. And it's like that's such a cop out, I think. You know, not that it's not important, and that thing, sending funds to places where they should be is not important, but it's like it's just so, I don't know, it leaves you as sort of tangential to everything.
Sure. Well, I'm going to play on, as we're thinking of ways to wrap up here.
Good luck
about
that.
Yeah. Thinking about, you mentioned the word important, and I'm going to go right back to the beginning to, when I asked about mindfulness, and you blew me off, man. You said, well, I don't know. Why do we call it that? So what is the importance to not only yourself and your community for being more mindful having more attention to a practice that gets you there and gets you thinking differently?
Like, I think that what it is that people see the world as they want it to be, or as they think it should be.
Right.
And this whole practice, what it does, it lets you see things as they truly are. And when we see things as they truly are, I believe we can't help but act appropriately.
Right.
So I think that the whole practice of mindfulness, if you will.
I want an example. Give me an example.
Oh, you never told me that'd be homework.
Yeah, really.
an example. It's
Stumped him.
You have stumped me, because I don't think that they exist in concrete examples.
Right.
It's when we see things in general as they truly are, we behave more appropriately.
Right.
You know, so I think that you can apply that to almost anything. And I think that's what the so-called practice of mindfulness does. Yes, you're in the moment and you're non-judgmental, which means you're not applying your filters to now.
Yeah.
But you're taking it for what it really is. Then we act more appropriately
for
what's needed.
So how do we, I'm taking away from you until we can see things as they really are, how do you do that?
It's a process.
Yeah.
It's a process. There is no magic bullet, I don't think.
Right. Although I've noticed, like, there isn't overusing that word community, but people, human beings that resonate for me and make me want to be in their circle.
Yeah.
Still 6 feet apart, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
I can tell, okay, they're doing the work.
Yeah.
And I want to learn from them what work they're doing. But it's inspiring to me to see that they're they're going that extra mile.
Yeah.
And I can see that there's payoffs to it. However, yeah, it's filtering out, going back to another word you used, how do you recognize the value of that extra mile other than by just paddling your canoe?
You don't recognize it.
No.
You feel it.
Right, okay.
Right, and that's being in tune. That's also seeing things as they truly are.
Right.
And feeling things
right.
as they truly are.
Yeah.
Because when we're in touch with this moment totally, we're also in touch with where we're at personally and what we're feeling.
Yeah.
A lot of times I think we tell ourselves, oh, I'm supposed to feel this way.
Right.
As opposed to just, like, once again, not applying a filter to it or an opinion or any kind of judgment and saying, oh, yeah. This is what I'm feeling. And love, would you look at that?
Yeah. And that's been a really big practice for me is to try to live non-judgmentally.
It's hard.
And I'm self-judging myself by saying, geez, I fail at that quite a lot.
Well, it's like there is no fail. This is all a process.
Right. Right.
It's that. Oh, there's my distraction. I'm going back to where I want to be. Where I think I need to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's the ongoing process. It's not a magical destination. It's doing the work all the time.
Yep. Okay. Well, that feels like a pausing spot.
It kind of does.
Yeah. So yeah. I have to send you back over the fence now.
Are you covering my travel expenses?
Yeah.
For my
appearance
today?
That's it.
Okay. Good.
Thanks for coming over.
Oh, anytime. I'm sure we'll do it again.
Yep, I think so too.
Absolutely.
And we're going to go out with a tune, and here it is.
Outstanding. I love it.
Okay, thanks.
Well, tonight in my mind's eye, I can see side by side. We are laughing. We're somewhere up on Manitoulin. Time is finally standing still. And in my dreams, I know I will play that scene over and over in slow-mo. Why must a moment like this always seem stolen? Who are we stealing it from? If time's like a always say, just give me a few more days, and I promise I'll get all of this work done. But I'm fooling myself, there's always something else, and I know you figured that out by now. Why must a moment like this always seem stolen? Who are we stealing it from? If time's like a river that just keeps on rolling, let's roll with it together. I called the office to tell them that I'm going offline for a while. Why must a moment like this always Let's roll with it together as one. Let's roll with it together as one.
Thanks for joining in today on another episode of James Gordon Song and Rants Man. Your participation is much appreciated, and if you feel that you got a value out of this, we're trying to keep the whole thing sustainable, so an e-transfer to james@jamesgordon.ca would be much appreciated. That's the same address you'd use if you want to contact me for any reason. I welcome that. And jamesgordon.ca is the website where you can track down the tunes that you heard me use today or any other albums you might want to check out. My thanks to Dean Hike, who joined me today. A couple of details I'd like to impart to you now that came up during our discussion. The book I mentioned is The Dawn of Everything, highly recommended. It's by David Graeber and David Wengrow, subtitled A New History of Humanity, published by McClelland and Stewart. If you want to find out more about the interesting work that my next door neighbor Dean Hike does, you could visit him on Twitter at HikeZen. His name is spelled H-U-Y-C-K. So that's H-U-Y-C-K-Z-E-N. And his website is dhike, D-H-Y-C-K, dot wixsite, that's W-I-X-S-I-T-E, .com. Check it out.